Professor Michael Leroy of the University of Illinois. Always great to check in with them. Professor, hello. How are you, my friend?
I'm well, John. Thanks for having me on. And as you know, lawyers like to argue, so it's no problem if you argue with me. Let's do this.
Well, the problem is I'm not a lawyer, so I feel like I'm undermatched for the equation, but I try my best. You don't want to chime in on my market capital theory on whether the market will sort this out instead of the government?
You know, when we get to the OSHA heat regulation, we can revisit that.
Okay.
I think that's a very good argument. So we can revisit that in just a moment.
I think I see where you're going here. So let's go ahead and set this up for people. The Biden administration announcing a new rule to address excessive heat in the workplace. Professor, are we talking about like construction workers, farm workers, or really anyone that's working in the more excessive heating conditions?
Well, we're talking about farm and construction workers. We're also talking about inside workers. When I first saw the headline on it, I was thinking exactly like you're thinking. And then when you read into it, they specifically indicate that they also want inside workplaces. And then I got to thinking, there are a lot of inside workplaces that rise above 80 degrees, which is the threshold for this regulation. A foundry, a steel plant, but even a kitchen, you know, a commercial kitchen, I suppose, is a hot place to work. So in any event, and by the way, I think some schools are.
I was just going to say, there's some teachers out there that haven't had AC ever in their schools that are saying, hey, that's me.
My wonderful wife would be one of those teachers, so I have to get that in. But seriously, it applies to 36 million workers. That's the estimate by the Department of Labor, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. The rule is probably going to cover 36 million workers if it goes into effect, regardless of inside or outside, where temperatures rise for a period of time above 80 degrees. And then we can talk about the regulation itself. But to give the overview of it, what this requires employers to do is, A, have a plan, some kind of heat abatement plan, B, a training component, C, acclimate employees to heat. John, to be honest with you, I don't know what that means. And it's not because the Department of Labor hasn't spelled it out. It's because I haven't had time to read that deeply into it. But also provide water on site, have medical assistance, a plan for this. And it is in recognition of more and more heat-related fatalities and injuries of a serious nature that occur due to heat exposure.
So basically, they don't say you have to shut down operations. You simply have to have a plan in place, alert your workers of what the how to work better in heat or how to take care of your body. I'm sure the training recognizes warning signs of heat stroke and like when to tap out or something. I don't know what it is. Provide water and then this acclimation thing, which I don't know exactly what that means either. Does it provide any actual like recourse for workers? I guess what I'm saying is that all sounds well and good, but does it actually accomplish anything of saving lives or keeping people safer?
Well, that's a really good question. And just generally, OSHA regulations have saved lives, but they've also failed to save lives. The enforcement mechanism that OSHA has, it's generally an understaffed agency. And then they under the law, they have, I think there are seven different escalating levels of citing employers who are not in compliance. So I would expect the enforcement to occur first, if this goes into effect, with instances of fatalities occurring due to heat. That would be the obvious one, and or very serious injuries. And then you go from there. I don't think, realistically speaking, OSHA is going to start to circulate among even landscaping companies or agricultural employers and do this. They're always fighting a sort of a rear guard battle, taking the most egregious cases and citing employers for that and hoping to make an example of them.
I have a weird question for you. Is there a world in which you write these rules and regulations down, right? Well-meaning, right? They got to have water. They're going to have training. Is there a world in which a company follows all those rules, and by writing it down and giving the company the opportunity to say, well, we followed the letter of the law, we are protected from any lawsuit related to heat death because we did what the government told us to do? Do you get what I'm asking?
I do. It's not a weird question. It's a real sensible question. So let's back up half a step. First of all, I don't want for the moment to pass your market capitalism idea. Huh. One could say that this is overregulation on OSHA's part, and that the real remedy for these situations is we have a labor market that allows people to quit bad employers and hire on with good employers, and we still have a robust labor market, even though the unemployment rate ticked up rather significantly. So, that's the market level response to it is you're burdening employers with these costs. And so that's one thought. But to your question that you framed as weird, which isn't weird, the way that most of these heat exposure cases are, if you want to use the term, prosecuted or litigated, is through tort law. So these come up as negligence lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And John, the classic case in my mind involves the Minnesota Vikings about 23 years ago, give or take, almost to the day. Corey Stringer was an offensive tackle for the Vikings. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
And they were just doing regular two-a-day practices up in Minnesota. And the temperatures were in the upper 80s, and there was high humidity, nothing really out of the ordinary. And Stringer developed heat exhaustion and heat stroke. And then it got out of control, and he had organ shutdown. He died about 3 days after being hospitalized. So that was his widow sued under tort law, and she lost her lawsuit against the NFL because if there's a labor agreement and there's any language that pertains to that topic, and there was some language in the NFLPA labor agreement, then it's called preempted. So that was kicked out. She was able to proceed against the manufacturer of equipment, beyond that, there's not a report of what happened.
Can I make sure I understand? Can I just stop you for a second? I want to make sure I understand.
Of course.
She did not win against the NFL because there was a labor agreement in place that detailed heat restrictions, and this circumstance, it resulted in a death, did not rise to the level of breaking the labor agreement between the NFL players and the league.
You got it right, John. And I would just add to that, the court implied that your recourse is through the collective bargaining agreement. And by the way, that's a catch-22 for her, because if she can't file a grievance, she's not an employee, and only an employee can file a grievance. So, conceptually, that is the right ruling. If you want to use sort of a common sense notion of justice, at least she should have had a day in court. Whether she prevails on a negligence theory, I don't know. But she was shut out of having a hearing, and they have one or two children who are, they've lost their father for the rest of their lives. So, but you got the outcome right. But reverting to the main topic here, there's tort law that stands in the place of OSHA regulation to handle these situations.
So I just want to extrapolate back to, like you're saying, go back to the original thought. If someone is in, let's say this is a UAW factory that goes above 80 degrees. I don't know if they do. I'm just throwing this out there.
Sure.
Could this new rule and regulation not affect union employees because you just revert automatically back to the negotiated contracts that these people have with their employers?
That's a tricky question. Hmm. My initial thought is it's different, and it's different because let's just say there's no lawsuit. It's just a question of, so let's just frame your question in terms of, suppose the OSHA heat regulation adds to, let's suppose there is no language, but let's suppose there is language on the collective bargaining agreement, and it's not as strong as the OSHA regulation. What happens in that instance? And then your question is, again, a preemption question. Does the labor agreement preempt or not? John, I don't know the answer to that. So we'd have to look specifically at how this regulation is handling that element.
Okay.
But your point is a really good point, which is there are many unions, and construction would come foremost to my mind. Construction unions will be very interested in bargaining safety for its employees, and so will contractors. They should at least look into this regulation and see how that potential conflict would be regulated or resolved.
So they have to kind of go back to the drawing board, even if they're in the middle of a CBA, like in a deal that they have with their union, they'll just have to figure it out what these new OSHA rules do and how that represents the union and hammer out some sort of clear, plain language to determine this, how it works.
Right. But, you know, John, I just want to single out one element of the proposed rule. And it's not a final rule. It's proposed. It's in a 90-day comment period. I think the rule vastly underestimates the cost to employers. It estimates the cost to employers at $8 billion a year, which is a fairly small cost if you spread it over, you know, thousands and thousands of workplaces. But where I think it underestimates is part of the rule requires breaks that occur to relieve people of heat under certain conditions. And so that is not a direct cost or direct expense, but now you're talking about employers taking on overtime, and especially if we just stick to construction, these are highly paid employees, $50 and up an hour in wages and benefits in the Chicago area. And so for an employer, you know, an additional break period really could be consequential, and it could be consequential in terms of how fast you complete a project. So I think it's a well-intentioned regulation. At some level, I think it's useful and necessary, but the cost implications, I think, are underestimated.
We had a great comment from the 847 texting in. What's interesting is many factories that don't have AC in their plant, they have large equipment which generates heat and makes it even hotter than the temperatures outside. These same factories have front offices with air conditioning for desk workers and owners who are not moving around, not exposed to the heat generating equipment. OSHA should require factories to have AC in the plant area, especially if the front offices have AC. Boy, I'm giving this texter a high five. That makes a lot of sense to me. I imagine that's not what OSHA is saying.
Well, I mean, OSHA isn't bringing in the air. OSHA isn't highlighting the contrast between management in the front of the factory and the wage earners in the back. But it's an excellent factual point that the texter is making. And I would just note that the standard is, so, you know, a question that I've heard from some other people is, how do you adjust this for geography? Now, the texter wasn't talking about geography per se, but talking about inside versus, you know, plant versus front office. This is set to a temperature standard, a temperature and humidity standard. So it really, that means if you're in Alaska, if you're in South Florida, wherever you are, the issue is how hot does this workplace get?
Interesting. And it's standard across each of those states, or no, it's standard, like what you're saying is that the standard is lower for Alaska because people are used to lower temperatures. And if it gets 7, I don't know what the number is. So can you just clarify that again?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I gave a misleading discussion there. No, it's a uniform standard.
I got it.
And it is set, it's a uniform standard. And it's premised on the idea that the human body starts to experience stress at 80 degrees and above with a certain humidity level.
The texter does bring up a good point about, like, equipment. Are these temperatures that are taken inside the warehouse in certain spots, or do they not outline how these threshold and how these temperatures are actually gotten?
No, the regulations get exactly at a worker's proximity to the heat source.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter if the sun's generating the heat, a big machine's generating the heat. That's immaterial. The question is, how close are you to the heat source, and what is your ambient temperature and your exposure to it?
Unplug. Just a couple more minutes left here with Professor Michael LeRoy. And, Professor, of course, we had a couple calls from teachers. No surprise, as we predicted. So if it's over 80 degrees for a certain amount of time, which some schools do get, would this require these schools, the employers, to follow these rules if this rule ends up going into place? I know we're in a waiting period, but water and training, et cetera, schools included in this?
Well, okay, that's a great question. It's a little tricky. Here's why it's tricky. Number one, there are 28. So the law, the Occupational Safety Health Act, allows states to take over worker safety regulation. And so there are 28 out of 50 states that have what's called a state-approved OSHA mandate. So in 28 states where there's a state law in place, a teacher there is basically out of luck with regard to this law. There are at least four states that I know of, and I wouldn't purport that I know comprehensively, but there are four states that do have heat regulations, but they pertain, as far as I can tell, to outdoor work, just at the top of our discussion. Mm-hmm. So I do think the short answer is for teachers in 28 states, including Illinois, the state plan is in place, and I'm not optimistic that the new rule would cover. Mm. Don't go to the bank on that. I'm just giving you my first blush at this, but it's a great question. But the second thing I want to point out quickly, John, is that there almost inevitably will be a lawsuit to challenge OSHA's authority to regulate. The Supreme Court issued a decision about a month ago called Bright Loper Enterprises versus Raimondo. And this is the ruling that struck down what's called Chevron deference.
Yep, we've Chevron talked about deference, it. Yep.
Okay, but that's the idea that courts don't have to give substantial deference to agency guidelines and regulations. So I think this is a rule that is primed for challenge. I'll pick a court, the Western District of Texas. I would expect an employer out there in the oil and gas industry to file a lawsuit. It gets really hot out there. And they have courts out there that'll be friendly to their interests. So honestly, John, I'll be a little surprised if this actually goes into effect immediately. I think it's going to be tied up in court.
Essentially, the Chevron deference would say, OSHA, even if Congress didn't outline every provision of what they do or don't have authority over, they have deference to the idea that they're the experts at this. They can kind of make the minute regulations and details that Congress doesn't do. The Supreme Court essentially threw that out, saying that no judges are going to have the power, or Congress has to write more specific laws and regulations. So these West Texas companies, you're surmising, I know we don't have any specifics now, but could sue and just say OSHA does not have the authority to make this law. Did I surmise that okay?
Perfectly. And yeah. And I think they'd prevail. As long as we're surmising, I would surmise that they would prevail. So I would just say that when OSHA was enacted in 1970, this was at a time when Lake Erie was literally on fire. For those of us who are old enough to remember whatever the Newsweek magazine, the cover, there was a real concern about environmental safety. And also what brought OSHA into existence was a coal mining explosion that killed 68 workers or some such in West Virginia. Hey, that was the catalyst for this.
Yeah, for sure.
Now we're at the point of peeling that away.
I got to let you go, Professor Leroy. We'll have to have you on again soon. No, you're totally fine. I appreciate the context. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Hey, thank you, John.